Hi, everybody. This is Gustavo, the host of the Enabled Disabled podcast. It is my great pleasure to have our first professional athlete on the show, Gene. Say that again.
Bonomo.
Gene Bonomo. We will edit that out. Gene, it's awesome to have you here. We're going to have a great conversation about your life, your career, your motorcycle racing, and your son, Declan, who was born with Down syndrome and who is an amazing kid. And you guys are raising money this year through your racing for the National Down Syndrome Society. And I'm really looking forward to this. Thank you for being on the show. A quick description of myself. I'm a middle-aged Latin American male. I have dark brown hair combed to the front. I'm wearing a black polo shirt, and I've got some blinds in the back in my living room and some beige drapes. So Gene, welcome to the show. Please tell us a little bit about yourself and visually describe a little bit of what you look like in your room.
It's great to be here. My name is Gene Bonomo. I'm in my living room. I got some pictures behind me. I'm wearing one of my racing shirts. I'm going to say I'm middle-aged too. I'm going to be one of the older athletes on the paddock this year for sure. I'm here with my three boys in my home. I'm happy to be here.
Phenomenal. When did you first start getting into racing?
So I started racing in 1992. I raced for a few years and then it just started to get, I probably raced for about 6 years and ended up becoming into the professional level also. Back then it was just the AMA and it just started to get too hard. And I had my first son and I kind of started to feel, okay, you know, this was not the path I should be on right now. Doors were shutting as opposed to opening. And so I backed out gracefully back then. And I was, believe it or not, off the bike for probably about 16 years, 16 years, just doing the basics of the family life, which was great. And I have through that journey, I had two other boys. And then my youngest is Declan, and he's the one who has Down syndrome. He's just changed the whole plot, just the whole dynamic of the family, is it?
Yep, and we're definitely gonna get into that. I'm just curious to learn a little bit more about you two. Was racing bike something that you were into since you were really young? Like, how did you start to know, hey, I like this, I'm good at this, and maybe I want to go professional with it?
It was a tough fight. My dad was super against it. He did buy me my first dirt, which I thought was bizarre. And all I did was get in trouble on the thing. And maybe that's why, because he would not let me use it as much as I wanted to. But as I started to progress, I was a lot younger at that time. It just started to kind of I went to the football and the other sports that were a little easier on, I think, my parents to get me there and to actually do it. But it was always just festering in the back of my mind. And it's like I would show up, or we'd be going down to the shore and I'd see the bikes go by on the highway and I would just dream about those bikes. And it was something that I knew it wasn't going to be attainable from my parents. They just were not really into it enough. So as I started to get a little bit older, I started my own business, which I still do today as landscaping company. And I got this big job. I don't know how I got it, but it was a doctor in the hospital. And it was just a really big job that we did. And it was actually enough money to where I was able to buy my first motorcycle. Yeah. And then I instantly fell off of it pretty quick. And someone's like, maybe you should take this school. It's called Mike Baldwin Pro School. And he was a world champion. And I didn't even know. I just showed up to this school and ended up being this racing school. And I ended up taking the bike instantly off the street and right to the racing. And that's where it all started. That's where, and I probably did that for about 6 or 7 years where I got a pro ranking. And then as it progressed, like I said, I started to have my family and things fell out of place at that
point. Yeah. It's interesting that you showed. So we're fellow entrepreneurs. So congratulations for opening your own company and pushing through that. And that's never easy. And it's never an easy step to do and to build that business. Do you have any advice for people today or kids today, if they're interested in going into racing, whether it's cars, whether it's bikes, is it for parents, keep your kids out of it? Or is there something you're doing it now? I'm imagining that you've got good feelings for it, even though there's an inherent.
That's the first and foremost. No one's going to just, I would want to say as a kid, you have the thought of being heard is definitely not, it's not as apparent in your mind. You're thinking more out of the box differently. You're not really thinking about things like that. So that's where they get that term, no fear. There's still inherited fear there, but it has to be, you have to be a special kind of person to, well, you can motocross, you can flat track and road race. They're all a little crazy from the natural, normal, let's say the regular person looking at it from the outside saying, man, these guys are crazy, but you have to be a special individual. And much like any other sport, really, you have to really have a desire to do it. And for baseball, for instance, for me, baseball was a sport. But then you look at these guys, they're a huge sport. It just wasn't for me. I was good at it. It just didn't do it for me. Football, same thing. I was good at it, but I had gotten hurt with football. And so I couldn't progress in that. It was just that trip. When I finally was able to grasp the bike, I was like, wow, this is really neat. So as far as to answer your question, I would say if your kid said to you, all I want to do is ride bikes, and I would say embrace it, because that's the way I was. And my parents didn't embrace it. And they felt bad later in life. They did feel bad. They were like, man, I just didn't. I think I wrote my mom a letter and my dad. I'm like, I'll get A's in all my classes. Just please buy me this bike. And I'm like, why didn't you buy me the bike? And she said, I don't know. It was dangerous. But she felt bad. So I think it's something that, and it's becoming more the norm now where people are starting to really look at and listen to their children and what they want to do. And it's just on the regular level, much if we spin off to Down syndrome, everyone has dreams, and we have to try to, as parents, we want to try to give them the avenues to do it. Racing is a little bit more expensive than a regular sport like football, baseball, basketball, and things like that. So it's a lot more that it's in play with racing and motorsports in general.
Absolutely. And there is I don't know too much about motorbike racing, but I'd imagine that between the suits and the helmets and some of the rules in the sports that they are trying to implement more safety, more safety to it. I know that with Formula One, it was a lot more dangerous to do it 30 years ago, 40 years ago than it is today.
Absolutely. It was a death mission back then, especially for those guys. The protection is amazing now. And it has spilled over amazingly into my racing and everyone else's racing with the air suits. And I have a great sponsor from Revit, Miles Matthews and Revit. They hooked me up with an awesome suit that's an air suit. As you eject off the bike, this suit has GPS and it senses your position, and it just jettisons these airbags in the suit. And it's just an amazing amount of added protection that they have that just encases your internals up here in air. And it's amazing. The helmets have come a long way. So much testing and development that goes into them.
I had no idea about the suits. That's an awesome innovation. That's really helpful.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. And that was one of the biggest things that we were trying to do when we were putting the suit deal together this year, was trying to get be able to utilize that tech air suit.
Are you the only one who has that tech air suit, or is that something that's getting more common in your racing circuit?
On the pro level, most of the guys are running with it now. It just makes sense. As far as Revit's concerned, it's going to be me, PJ Jacobson, and Daniela Petrucci, all top riders. And those two guys are huge. I'm the grassroots guy. These guys are world championship in MotoGP and world championship from World Super Sport and World Super Fight is PJ. Yeah. So it's those, and it all started out in MotoGP. They usually start with that higher platform and it stems down. It started to trickle down into the mainstream now, which is great. And I think it drastically reduces a lot of injury.
That's fantastic to hear. Yeah. And so let's go back in time a little bit to where you have your first two sons and you're raising a family and you're doing the family entrepreneur thing, never easy to balance either. And then Declan is born. And can you talk a little bit, and feel free to share whatever you like. Just can you talk a little bit again for new parents who I've just had a child, either it can be any disability, it could be any chronic condition, it can be Down syndrome. What are the kind of emotions that are going through you, and what's the process of, okay, how am I going to help my son thrive? How are we going to adapt? How are we going to learn? Tell us a little bit about what that process was like.
Yeah. I have to start back when I was real quick, just to stem on something, is that when I was 17 years old, probably 16, 17, I was dating a girl from my town. And there was this little boy, Tommy. I want to say it's Tommy. I'm almost 100% sure. And he used to sit on this rock on the corner warehouse, and he had Down syndrome. And he was just the cutest little guy. He would just sit there. I guess he would visit his grandparents a few weeks a year. So you only see him like during the summer. And I would talk to him, and he was just, and I remember saying these words. I remember, if I ever have a son, I want to have a son just like that. And it didn't resonate with me until it happened, but it was even later on. So I always thought that was a cool gift that I never realized that I bought on myself. But so moving forward to where we're at, where we got the news about that one, to be as frank as I can be, and it's almost shameful me to say, at the time I wasn't doing well with my ex. We were not doing well in our relationship. And all of a sudden, now we have another child coming on. I was like, oh man, it's going to be tough. She had some issues, and she was having a hard time with two perfectly healthy boys. And I was just, man, I don't want. And then all of a sudden we found out he might have Down syndrome, and they were just so brutal about it. They're like, no, you don't want to just get an abortion. Like right away, that was where they went with it. They want to terminate the pregnancy. We're here for you. And it was just very shocking. And that's probably part of the things that we can cover later. And I was the same way. I was scared. I didn't know who to talk to. I was embarrassed for some reason, which is totally ridiculous. And I was worried just because the way things were seemingly falling apart. And then now I had to even work even harder. Like I said, I wasn't very uneducated about it. And the doctors had nothing for me. Yeah, you want to terminate this pregnancy, you terminate. That's all it gave us. There was no support system, nowhere to talk to you, no NDSS, no nothing. Just here you go. We're here to help you. And it was sad, very sad. Fast forwarding into it, I am very thankful to my ex, because that was one thing she stood firm on, because she was like, I was kind of on that side of we should do this, but she stood firm. Thank God she did. And we had Declan, and right out of the gate, we had some issues. He had they call it a double bubble, duodenal atresia. And so your stomach looks like two stomachs, it's blocked. And when you look at the scan, it looks like you have two, they call it double bubble. So right away he had to have surgery, 2 days old. And I'm like, oh, here. And then the doctors wanted to remove his appendix for some crazy reason. And this is where I started to become an advocate. And I'm like, why do you want to take his appendix out? Because my mom was an OR nurse. She's like, you don't need to take that appendix out. They have to take his whole bowel out to get to the appendix. And it's not necessary. Just tell him to leave it alone. And I was like, went back to the doctor. I'm like, I just want you to leave his appendix alone. Of course, I was overridden by my ex and her parents, and they ended up taking his appendix as well, fixing the double bubble, which is sort of like a basic surgery at that time. And what had happened was he was allergic to the latex. So when they put him back together and he was all good and, you know, he was fine for a few weeks, he ended up getting adhesions all over his bowels and everything got blocked. So now I'm like, you were right. They should have just left them alone, because if they hadn't taken the bowel out, they wouldn't have gotten through. And that's when I said to myself, there's never again, I'm going to research everything, and no one's ever going to tell me what they're going to do with my son. And that's where it started to evolve. For me, I was on that parental instinct. I'm going to give this kid everything that he deserves, because he can't speak for himself. It was just at that point, it's not even, I want to say it was probably 4 months old by the time the second, maybe. And things started to transition again with that kind of behavior, where my ex started to back away from the situation, which I thought was bizarre. And so I took this role. It was very strange how I was against it and she was for it, but then, you know, all of a sudden she started to back away, and then eventually she left. And yeah, I wouldn't say Declan wasn't even a year, maybe a year, year and not even a year and a couple months. And I was alone. I had the three boys. I'm getting choked up here. I can't believe it. But yeah, so it was tough. It was tough. But I just switched all the gears. I was like, how am I going to fix this? How am I going to survive? How am I going to do this? And I still hadn't come into the NDSS, and I was just walking alone. trying to figure this all out, researching. And the school system sort of helped me. They did. But it just, they weren't as, they didn't have the knowledge as much as they have now, even 10 years later. Let's say it just has evolved so much more with information for someone like me to try to, how am I going to deal with this? How am I going to do these extra college appointments? How am I going to run my business? How am I going to get these two to school and get him to school? It was crazy, but I figured it out somehow. I can't tell you how, but I figured it out, and it's been a blessing. He's been just like, it's all those days where you wake up and you just look, and you probably do it, and we all do it. You have a bad day, you wake up and just like, oh, I got to do this. Or, and he just be like, hey, Dad, hi, how you doing? I love you. Like, just, and just that amazing presence that he had, I think, saved me. And as he got older, it's just been a blessing every day, a different story, a different amazing thing he does. And my other two are amazing. I don't want to push them aside. They've just been the greatest, bigger brothers to him, greatest peers. They treat him as one of their own. They bash him around, they torture him and all that good stuff, like big brothers do. And so it's been quite the journey.
That's an amazing story. Thank you for digging deep into that. That's never easy to relive past challenges and hardships. So thank you for sharing. That's going to, I think, really help people. I think it's interesting to see the story that I have a younger brother, and we were pretty much always good friends. We're 3 years apart, and he's non-disabled, but it was always partially because we came from Brazil when I was two, and partially just the way my parents were, there was this real solidity within our family. And it was like, you two are brothers and you need to learn how to trust each other, how to rely on each other, how to be friends, because this is family and this is what you have. And even though we always had other friends, that I think that really stuck with us. And my brother, besides myself, has been a harsh critic. He'll tell me when I'm doing something wrong. He'll help me, like, hey, and in basketball, why don't you try this instead? He had that empathy. He saw me as a human being.
Right.
And that's something that I couldn't have asked for a better brother. I couldn't have asked for a better friend growing up than him. And it's interesting that seeing you've got a similar dynamic in your home where your two older sons are seeing Declan as a human being. Like, they're accepting him for who he is, they're acknowledging him for who he is, and they're including him in the family, which is beautiful.
Right. They're amazing. All three of them are amazing. I'm definitely blessed for sure. And now it's as they're getting older, it's even more helpful, just the way they, they step up and just do whatever, help Declan with something on his computer, or help him with schoolwork, or even fixing one of his games, playing a game where he's stuck on a level ready to jump through the ceiling. Just the same, the frustration's there, and I gotta help him, but he does, and it's, but I like that because that's real and it's true. And they, I would almost say, it's not even so much to where they're just like, oh, I gotta help him no matter what. They still cry and moan about it too, just like the rest of us. So I try to keep it where he's special, but he is also just, they're all on the same level. They really, and that's sort of the way I try to keep it. And that just comes natural to them to help. And it's seemingly all, everyone around us. I try to put him out there, his videos and dancing and just things he cooks with me. I try to put little videos. We're trying to figure out a niche here, what he's going to be. He rides a quad. I'm a little nervous about the motorcycle just because it requires so much more attention, and he may see me and he'll just be like, hey, Dad, and forget what he's doing. And his reaction might not be as quick. So the motorcycle still worries me, but I'm hoping to see if we can figure that out. Don't want to keep, he's like my biggest fan, and he's also the one, he's probably more than the other ones who wants to ride. So it's pretty cool.
That is cool. How did you, I imagine that your mom was a really helpful support structure as you moved through this. And then how did you come across the NDSS and when was that? And let's talk a little bit about the ways in which they've been so supportive and helpful and have really improved the dynamic of your life and Declan's life.
That's a great question. I had this down, but I'm going to say he was probably around 6 or 7 years old. It was pretty much getting in, maybe even a little later than that. I wish I had a date for you, but when I was doing the whole schooling and his programs in school, which, like I said, when you're diagnosed, when you have a diagnosis, they go right to the textbook and they have it all mapped out, what we're going to give, what services, PT, OT, speech, and the amount of time allocated for each child and so on. And then they have groups like multiple disability rooms. They have children with autism. And then, where does he fit in there? Levels of Down syndrome the scope is huge as far as delays, and there's no set. They're not all on the same level, just like autism or any other handicap. You know, every degree of it is different. So that's where I was starting to freak out. And I'm like, I don't know what to do. And my mom actually suggested start looking for groups. And I was like, I don't need a sports. I'm, you know, macho. I don't need a sports system. I don't need to, the school. I'm just going to fight with the school. But I didn't. Advocacy is a big help because the school's going to kind of, and I don't want to sound like I'm knocking the schools, but they have a budget. They have things in place and I get it. But we have to push the envelope as parents on all that. And just like anything else, pushing and pushing. The first quest was let's go to the National Down Syndrome Society. So I had called over and I already started to research on the computer. And first thing I saw was the advocacy. And someone answered and she came right on to me and she started talking to me. And I was telling her my situation and she was just kind of, wow, my God, okay, we definitely need help. And it just showed me the blueprint of how to address the school system and not back down and not, you just have to, you can't go in there like guns blazing, but you have to be strong and you have to be persistent and give your child the best program that he needs. And that was the biggest help that they gave me as far as even medical things, medical advice, insurances and things like that. And then it also stemmed out lately. Got me into the Special Olympics because for some reason I was blinded by Special Olympics. I just didn't even, I'm like, what am I going to do with this guy? And they were like, oh yeah, you got to get him into it. And it was the greatest. It was a great program. They just have so many avenues early on. And just someone to talk to, someone who can appreciate what you're going through, who has a diverse amount, this specific diagnosis and what they have to offer. And it continues to grow as all the individuals grow. And that's where I start to see that, okay, he's this cute little guy and everybody loves him and everything. But I'm starting to see now the transition, the hurdle that I'm having trouble with right now of me watching is the friend. So his level stays the same, but his friends are growing and now they're not wanting to hang out with him. And it's sad because I'm bored. And that's the thing I'm starting to deal with right now, learning how to adjust to that. It's an ongoing process as they get older. Cuteness, I guess you want to say, wears off. I don't think it does. I think they're all amazing and beautiful. I think maybe it's sad, but it's true. It just seems to be, I think the world's embracing it way more now. And that was the greatest advice and information that I got out of the NDSS. And that's why I want to be a part of it. It was a huge step for me in learning how to feel and fight and admit that I don't know. I don't have all the answers.
It's hard. I know my parents were, especially my mom, did a great job, advocating for me through school. I've spoken to people on this podcast that I'm still in touch with. Her son was born with cerebral palsy. He was on the podcast. He's phenomenal. But she talked a lot through everything that she had to learn in helping him get what he actually needed in school versus what the school was willing to give. So advocacy is huge. But if you don't know what to fight for, you're swinging blindly, right? You're out there fighting, but you need the information. You need the foundation of knowledge and the people helping you and support you to say, actually, we think you should look here. Or you should try this because this is going to help your son out way more. So that foundation is tremendously
important. How to word a sentence. He needs he needs this. Or then it was even the last resort of, well, we're going to take him out of district to a better school. And guess who's paying for it? Even things like that. And that's where you get to the last resort. So you're like, let's see, you got to bend here a little bit. Give me two more hours of speech a week. And I think that's probably one of Declan's greatest hurdles, speech. You spoke to him briefly, and it's a little hard to understand him, and that's one of the things we have to try to dial in on him.
That'll come with time. I think that he's 13 or 14 now.
14.
So I think 14 is an awkward age for most kids. Yeah. And all of those transition periods are differently difficult for everybody. So it's going to be, obviously with Declan, there's some additional challenges there. But I think that with, like any kid, like any human being, if you give them the love, if you give them the support, if you give them the attention, they're gonna find their way as people, and people are gonna see them for who they are. It's just a matter of persistence, like you said, having the right people behind you and supporting you, and just moving through those challenges that life just never seems to stop giving us, no matter who we are.
That's absolutely right. That's getting them out there. You participating, like you said, with you, I can do this, or just participation, making sure they're included. That was another issue. I'm sure that was probably an issue, a hurdle that your mom had to go through. Why can't he be out here playing basketball? Figure it out. Let's figure this out. I know it's coming. And it's like you said, we've come a long way, but there's still more work. And that's kind of how, as life kind of went on, so I can't even tell you exactly how I got back into racing. And it almost did seem like an irresponsible move, but I was having my struggles because most of my friends were in this lake community. I'm in a beautiful lake community here in England, New Jersey. And not to knock horseshoes or darts or this or that, or just all these other extracurricular activities were just not for me. It wasn't doing it for me. And I was always, I had to be doing something, like running around, doing something, riding something. My son, I came across some pictures and some trophies, and like, it was just like that. And then so with that, I think my friend called me from back in the day, and it was just amazing. He had a bike for sale. And the next thing you know, I was on the bike doing track days, and it's been good for me because it gives me an outlet. Yeah. And I would bring the boys with me, and they all ride and do stuff. So it was just another great avenue and a good therapeutic thing for me too, as a person. It's just evolved, and I'm not really content with just kind of, I'm just going to hang out here and do track days. Let me try racing. And then I started doing some endurance racing with a guy I met. He's Canadian, but he lives in New Hampshire, and we became best friends. And after a few years, we won 3 national titles in team challenge endurance racing, you know, and then it's on to the next, what's the next hurdle, which leads me to Moto America now. That's going to be a big one.
How much training do you have to do, Gene, how long did it take where you started to feel like I'm getting my skills back? Or was it like that old adage about riding a bike you never really forget once you get back on? Like, what does the process look for you now?
I'm going to say the first day I got back onto the racetrack for racing, because I didn't, you know, even ridiculously as it sounds, I didn't go until track day. I went right back to racing like a nut. And I remember the first day I was out there, I'm like, what am I doing out here? It was in New Hampshire. I was turning into turn one, and I'm like, what are you doing? But then the way the bikes have evolved from the 90s to I guess the bike I was on was 2008. It was a few years older, but that bike has remained unchanged for a few years. But it was just nine. I was almost instantly where I was as a pro years ago there. And it was amazing, the technology and how easy it is to ride these bikes now. It's the way different sport. It just like everything else, it's evolved too. But I do spend a lot of time training because it's hard for me. I'll say it again, I'm one of the oldest guys. I probably will be the oldest guy in the paddock this year. And I do push myself. And I'm at least an hour and a half a day in the gym doing something. I try to ride with my son. We didn't get to ride too much this year, but he came out to California with me, and we had a lot of fun out there. So anytime we're riding, we're having fun. And it's a nice way. We call it training, but you can ride a motocross bike or a supermoto. It all transitions and all helps you with your road race.
That's awesome. And I know Declan's there. I know he's participating. I know he's loving it. Can you talk a little bit about what it's like? How has he taken with the crew, the team members, the fans? Like, does he get to, I'm sure he's interacting with everybody and just cheering people on, learning, enjoying the experience. That must be interesting to see, like, this whole new world open up for him that most kids don't get to experience.
It's great. I mean, the first time they went was obviously I had to start as an amateur again, work my way back up through the ranks. They were there, but they were riding their skateboards and their scooters, and they were oblivious to what's going on. And they were a lot younger. They were white. And they kind of stayed, didn't come as much when we started to travel a little bit more. And I would probably go away once a month, and I would start the team challenge, which was like a national thing. And I would bring them to New Hampshire, which would be considered my home track. Even though it's a track in Jersey, I just appreciate that facility and the people. They were my friends from years ago, and it's just a great place to be. And they had the national there every year. It was always Father's Day weekend, which was brilliant. And we always won, and it was really cool. So it was in the neat. And I used to remember as they got older, they were there. And I'm like, come on, it's Father's Day. Come to the track with me, you know, the older guys. And then the last time we had gone there, because they stopped doing that race up there, unfortunately, a few years ago. But he had won a bunch of medals in the Special Olympics. And I had just told my friend, it's like, fine. And so we go to the riders meeting. I'm not sure if you ever got a hold of that video that they just had this great presentation.
Right.
They gave him a national award for the Loud River Racing Series for all his achievements. It was just, I couldn't even speak. Like, I was so taken back by it. Cause he won like 5 medals in the Special Olympics and like a week or two prior to that. So it was like motorcycles, what? And it was fantastic. It was a beautiful moment. And that's the motorcycle industry in a nutshell. They just embrace everything, and from one end of the scope to the other. And, you know, it is exciting for them, I think, to be there. And he loves it, especially, you know, because now that some of the women will take him, and if I have to go out on track, they'll take him away if my girlfriend doesn't come, or my sister who was there in Daytona, so she was big elf, and my other son came. They just kind of go through, and everyone just gets to know them as they go. And so now this was the first Moto America event, because Daytona changed over this year, so it was even bigger platform of everything that's going on. So it was pretty exciting.
That's phenomenal. And the Moto America is where can we watch it? Where can we are all the events televised, or are some of them televised, some of them not? Do they stream it?
They're starting to put some of them on, but it's Fan Choice Network. I'm hoping it didn't change this year, but I can update you on that. And it is a web-based, you can buy the series, but they do put some of them out there. Not enough, but that's where it's evolving now. It's starting to come more mainstream, as it should, because it is exciting for people to actually see how much goes into it. Just to get one team out there and onto the track, it's very involved. And it's just such a tight-knit group. Everyone's just so close. Everyone's gets what they're doing out here. I think sometimes it's nice to see someone like me come in and I have a little bit more on my platform, whereas I'm bringing something else into the mix, something that I believe in. Seems to be getting some attention right now, which is great.
Absolutely. So you are sporting the NDSS logo on your suit, and you're basically helping raise awareness for the organization, teach people, expose people, build the awareness of what it is that they're trying to do and what their mission is.
Exactly. 100%.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. And I'm going to just put on some events through the year. I'm going to try to do an endurance event for myself, basically, and maybe just get out on the bike as long as I can stand it. Maybe at a track event, and maybe try to raise some funds that way for them. And it's in my wheelhouse. So I think just kind of people when they run miles or do, you know, things like that for donations, I might do like laps. That would be one of my events this year. We're going to try to get that locked up soon. And then there's 12 races for Moto America. And it's going to be a tough call just to get in there and get on the grid there. We're doing the Stockholm 1000, Ninja ZX10R. It's another level of bike that I'm just learning. Even I'm always learning. I went from the 600, which would be GTU, it's a lower CC bike, to a 1000. So you're going from 115 horsepower to 200 and something horsepower. So it's a big jump in the motorcycle.
That's significant. For people who don't know, those bikes, give us a reference point. How fast are you going in a race, and how quickly are you accelerating from zero to wherever it is you're going, 160, 150? I don't know what your top speed is on those bikes.
It's different on many of the tracks, but I'm going to say the 1000 could probably get close to 200 miles an hour if you were to open it up at Daytona, which is probably one of the fastest tracks. But they usually run that race is on 600s. But all the tracks, Road America's got a fast, wicked fast back street. And so there's a lot of tracks where it's the turning and the maneuvering at 80, 50, 60, 70, 80, 90, 100, 150 mile an hour corners that, yeah, where it's really, put your knee on the ground and it's pretty wild.
I have a client who was a former, he's a professional racer on the weekends too. And he races cars, but he says that he's found, I think he's in his mid forties right now, late forties. He said that he finds a lot of the younger racers are a little bit more, less careful or much more willing to take risks that maybe they shouldn't take. That's where he finds the most difficulty is dealing with the younger guys who don't rip back. I don't want to say this the wrong way, but it's like they don't have an appreciation as much for better racing techniques. Do you see the same thing?
I think motorcycles has a little bit more of a gentleman approach to it, only because of the risk factor. But I definitely will say that the younger guys will a lot more, I don't want to say what I want to say, but they got a bigger set, I want to say, maybe, that they're not risking as much. The thought process, or not even thinking about risk at all, really, I think. But I would say that there is a level of as a gentleman in that sport, because it's just so much, it's just such a fine line of being on it and being off it and being hurt. And so there is, but there, I would say that as far as a fear factor is concerned, more so than a respect factor, I would say some of the younger guys definitely have less fear than, you know, some of the older guys. And that's part of that whole sport, that mental drama of it. It's not easy to do it. It's easy everybody to do it. But it's a commitment.
Yep. Yep. But it's
fun.
It's something where you want to respect the risks, but you still have to, as a professional racer, you're still trying to beat the person next to you and finish as quickly as you can. So you still have to, you have to balance that risk reward, like in a split second.
And when you know, if these guys they're in the heat of a battle and it's close, they're going to rub elbows and they're going to push on each other. And no doubt there, but that's with all the respect in the world. It's just part of it, but yeah, so it's great. It's a great sport. I wish they would bring it, you know, more into the nation, a little bit more and up close, more direct, at those cameras right on those bikes and everybody's faces, and let them really see what's going on that bike. The technology out there is amazing right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
We appreciate it. And back to the voice that we were all, you know, talking about, I think that these type of sports, and I think Moto America for me this year is going to be a great, I think they're showing super interest in this, and I just feel like it's just going to be a great platform. However we do, they're going to give us the time to really get the word out, what we're trying to say here.
That's really fantastic of them, and I hope more professional sports organizations take that into account, and hopefully you can help be the launching pad for that, right? If this goes well, which we all hope, and every indication is that it will, you can keep building off of that and potentially helping or consulting with other sporting organizations in different sports to help raise even more awareness.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's great. And like I said, it's just amazing how doors open for you with this. It's just that with, you know, the people that I met, like just at Daytona, just that one event. It's amazing. It's there. It's in front of us. We just have to embrace it.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Everyone has something to offer to help, not just money. You always center. I'm sure you've run into people that have helped you along the way. It's just amazing how it happens. It just catches you off guard. So, like I said, this guy, it was Sheridan Marais. He was one of the guys who was contending to win the Daytona 200. And somehow they found out that I was not getting into the race. And, you know, he came over and asked me for my tank, and I'm like, I was a little standoffish, I'm not gonna lie. I'm just gonna get coming carnival my bike here, and this is kind of weird, and I was still upset. But and then he read, he stepped back and he's like looking at my body and he's like, oh, so a deck weren't sitting there. And so you knew his dad? And I'm like, yeah. And it was just, it just opened a whole other dialogue. And to the point where I was like, yeah, whatever you need, what do you want to take? It was pretty neat.
So I know we talked about it offline, but why don't you tell us so that everybody knows, what, tell us about that interaction and what happened, what came out of it.
So with that interaction, Stefan was, is his name. He runs the, I want to call it the Golf Masters. I should know this. And it's the Golf Masters, but it's one of the biggest Special Olympics for the on the world over in Europe. That it's a big fundraiser. And it would be like long ball golf. So everyone gets their best shot. And they just raise awareness and funds for the Special Olympics, the World Special Olympics, just on a higher platform. So he invited me out to go to the one of the events. The country's closed down now, he said, still. So when they do start it back up, and it's in Macau every year, which I've never been to. And they have you pay the parents, or if you have the son or a friend or an athlete, that they pay for everything. 5-star hotels, you just have to pay for your airfare there. And then it's just getting involved, and it's the same type of platform, fundraisers, and everything goes towards the cause and keeping these Olympics going. Yeah, it's amazing. And it was just in a, like I said, in the guarded conversation over a gas tank, you know, and it was pretty wild. And I'm glad he came in third in the race. So I'm glad that was pretty cool.
That is pretty cool. That's the whole key, is you got to put yourself out there and you got to expose yourself to those opportunities before just sitting at home, not wanting to get out there, not wanting to take risks, not wanting to do things. There's not a lot that's going to happen.
It's made sense for me doing what I do. I like, and we talked about, people say it's risky and it's this and that, but I figure I'm not even sure how it evolved, but it just made sense to me. And with Declan there, it's even better because it just sparks and people see him running around. What do you do with him when you go on the bike? Someone will kick him back into play here. I usually have someone there with me, but and if I don't, there's always someone willing to help me.
It's a community. Like you said, it's a tight-knit community.
It's amazing. Even Dunlop Tires, they're a sponsor of mine. And Corey's, just bring them, drop them off, or send them over here. We'll keep them busy. And it's great.
And Gene, I really appreciate all the time, and I think this has been interesting. What have I missed anything in this conversation that you feel is important to talk about?
No, I think we covered a lot. I'm glad it was good to share that part of something that I don't usually talk about too much, how I got here when we first found out that everyone would have bouncing. Just that's the kind of awareness I want people to know, because I did have someone reach out to me once, or I reached out to someone who came with the same situation. Now we have another great little guy around here in this community. And he's just a wonderful little guy, Raymond. And I feel like she had already made her decision. It was just the usual. It's tough, a lot of emotions going on, and they knew they were going to have. I think she was just kind of going through that journey that you're going to go through. And she's on, and I just kind of wrote her a letter on Facebook, and I told her everything you're feeling is normal. it's the unknown we're afraid of. I don't think for a minute they were thinking like us, not having right like that. It just, but the way some society, it's a lot of it, the doctors come, like I said, they came in and I'm like, you want to board you so you can go to the next room over here. Like, it was just horrible. It was sad. And then when you see this beautiful person here, you're just like, oh my God, you get robbed. The world gets robbed with someone like this. And I think really just, we have to just give them the avenues to grow and be their own individual. They have dreams and they say, oh yeah, they're so happy. And it's true. They are so happy. But they do get sad and they do yearn and they do have dreams, and we have to try to figure it out what it is. And we're still working on that with that one.
Yeah. So I'm not a parent, but I imagine that everything is, all those decisions are totally normal, and there's always a range of emotions that we go through. And when you talk to parents, so many you hear from when they're expecting is, I'm just hoping the baby's healthy. I'm just hoping the baby's healthy. And I don't blame them for that, because that's a normal thing. It's a cultural thing. It's a societal thing. And that's what makes those decisions and those emotions more difficult, because as a parent, that you're going against the grain. You're going to be in the minority. But on the flip side, there's so many blessings and amazing experiences and opportunities that you get because you made that decision, because you showed that courage, that most people don't get to experience. Like, I'm not going to say it's a cut and dry thing. I'm just going to say there are a lot of benefits and a lot of things and that kids with a disability bring to this world that people don't realize yet. And more people are, but I'm really happy that there are parents like you. I'm really happy that there are parents and human beings like the people we've met on this show that I know personally who took that journey, embraced it, and found the way to make it just as beautiful and just as amazing and just as difficult as raising any human being.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's really the difference. Yes, because it's just because they're healthy doesn't mean they're not going to be diagnosed with a learning disability or there's always hurdles.
Always hurdles. Exactly.
Like I said, when you hear it from the doctor like that, you just like, they put you in this negative state where you're like, I'm dead in the water before I even get started here. And it's terrible. I pray that that's not how it is, how they present things the way it is now. That's the way it was for me 14 years ago.
Yeah.
Sure. It's come all that avenue or that part of it. I have seen how I'm sure it's changed.
I don't know. I hope it's changed too.
These are all the things that the National Down Syndrome Society is like. It's just one big operation on every level from start to finish. And it's all about just improving the lives in that journey, helping open doors for them as they get older and breaking down doors.
Absolutely.
If they're there.
And how can people, I know that you're going to send us all of the website info, but are there other ways that people can connect with you once the show comes out? Instagram, email, MotoGP, NDSS, like where are the ways that people can get in touch with you?
For right now, I'm on Facebook. It's Jenna Rosagino, and Instagram as well. And then I would have the link for the NDSS, and it's Mission Decky. I don't have the specific link because we just got it up running, so we'll definitely have to post that at a later time. It's up on my Facebook page right now. And it will be Jenna Rosagino and my Instagram as well.
Fantastic.
That'll give you the basis where you start this. I have to add to it as we go. And feel free to look at my Facebook page and you'll see that one in there. You dig in there a little bit, go back into my stories and you'll see videos. And we're going to try to post more of him and his brothers and just everyone as much as we can. The fundraising is a small part, but it's a part that's going to help the NDSS. And so whatever we can do to put more money on the table for them to complete the mission that they have and help every year is what we're here to do.
Fantastic. Yeah. Hopefully, as far as I'm concerned, you have an open invitation back here anytime. Keep us posted. Once the season's on, once the season's over, you can come back. We can do another show. We can talk about how, when, and if there's any events or any fundraisers that you have coming up, just let us know and we'll post them as well.
Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah. I'm going to do I haven't gotten the trigger pulled on it yet, but I'm trying to get a helmet from one of my sponsors, Arai, and we'll see if we can sort of maybe even make a nice, some kind of painting on that helmet or get one of those, one really good one that I think it's so beautiful on that kind of says everything just by looking at it, and we could put the NDSS on it and wrap all that off. Just things like that. I'm going to have my team shirts up and as much information as I can get on there so that people can watch and see what's going on with everybody up there. Oh, definitely. I appreciate you having me on. It's great to meet you too.
Likewise.
You have an awesome story too, my man.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
I'd like to hear more about that.
At any time. Absolutely. Happy to share.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
So you have yourself a great night. Thank you so much. And we'll definitely be in touch.